Good morning, and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship's virtual Sunday service on this glorious October morning. We are affectionately also known as WOOF, and our congregants are sometimes referred to affectionately as WOOFers. You'll be seeing some of them throughout the service this morning. My name is Salima Malson. My pronouns are she and her, and it is my privilege to be part of our time together this morning. Sunday services this month are all about relationships. And our guest speaker, whom you will meet right now, will get us started.
Good morning. I'm the Reverend Jill Jarvis, a semi-retired Unitarian Universalist minister, living most of the time in Kansas City, Missouri, but speaking to you today from a tiny village in the French Pyrenees. And I'm delighted to be here with you virtually today as we explore October's Soul Matters theme, Cultivating Relationship. That's a theme with so many possibilities as a religious question, especially relevant to our seventh principle, a commitment to affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. So that's about cultivating relationship to, well, everything, to one another as individuals, to family and friends, to ourselves, to the wider community, to the earth, to our ancestors, and to the future. Maybe especially to the future. So today we'll consider the implications of cultivating relationships that hold the potential to fundamentally change us, not only as individuals, but as congregations and as a religious movement that hopes to speak to the future.
So stay with us and be part of this celebration of autumn as we begin with the latest news about our annual auction.
Howdy, Woofers. I'm okay. You okay?
I'm okay. You're okay.
I'm okay. Are you okay?
I'm okay. You okay?
I'm okay. You okay?
I'm okay. You're okay, too.
Howdy. I'm okay. Are you okay?
Moi, je vais bien. Et toi, tu vas bien?
Well, I'm okay. You okay?
I'm okay. You okay?
I'm okay. You okay?
I'm okay. You okay?
We might be a little worse for the wear. Might have some killer saddle sores from sitting around the house for so long. And we might just be wishing we could punch a few people rather than just cattle. But for the most part, we're all okay. That's why no place I'd rather be than the I'm okay, you're okay corral for WOOF's annual auction, online from October 17th through 23rd. Now, you can't spit without finding info on how to join the festivities on email and in social media. But if you need help, just call, and we got a cowboy or two who will help walk you through it. And don't forget to mark your calendar on that last day to join us for a finale shindig, where we're going to celebrate a finishing up another successful auction and pat ourselves on the backs for making it through a year in the COVID hoosegow. This ain't no time for a hitch and you get along. There's tons of great stuff that's there for the taking, with high bid, of course. So join the fun at the I'm Okay, You're Okay Corral, October 17th through 23rd, online.
Now that we know everyone is okay, let's remind ourselves that everyone is welcome here for this morning service and for our virtual coffee hour at 11:30. You'll find the link to it in your order of service. And if this is your first time with us and you don't have one, don't hesitate to contact our congregational administrator, whose information you'll see later on the screen. She will gladly and quickly send you the link. We would love for you to join us. And if you do have an order of service, please take a look at what else is happening here at WOOF this week, on Zoom or in small groups in person. But right now, let's settle in, get comfortable, take a breath, and know that whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever your politics or spiritual practices, your age or abilities, color of your skin, where you were born, whomever you love, or how you identify your gender, this morning we are all part of a growing circle of caring and compassion. All of us, right here, right now. And as I light the chalice that represents our shared and scattered faith, let us breathe in its light and its warmth and speak together our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
It is so good to be with you today. I'm delighted to be here this morning to talk to you about the story you're about to see, which is called Be a Friend by Selena Yoon. This story is about a little boy who loves to mime. We won't see or hear him speak, but he will communicate in his own way. And sometimes communicating in your own way and in your own time can be a lonely experience. Many of us know what it's like to be different and what it's like to have the courage to build new community. For we do those things at WOOF every day. We know the importance of finding your people, of staking your claim, to building the beloved community together. When's a time that you have let difference stand in your way? When you have let difference make you feel like walls were surrounding you? And when was a time where you took down those walls, where you welcomed difference into your life, where you embraced building community.
Be a Friend by Selena Yoon. Dennis was an ordinary boy who expressed himself in extraordinary ways. Everyone called him Mime Boy. Dennis didn't speak a word. He would only act in scenes. Some children would show and tell in class. Dennis would mime instead. Egg, caterpillar, chrysalis, butterfly. Some children liked to climb a tree. Dennis was happy to be a tree. But even trees get lonely sometimes. Dennis felt invisible. It was as if he were standing on the other side of a wall. Until one day Dennis kicked an imaginary ball. And someone caught it. Her name was Joy. There was no wall between Dennis and Joy. It was more like a mirror. They saw the world the same way. Dennis and Joy didn't speak a word. Because friends don't have to. But they laughed out loud with jazz hands. For all the world to see.
Our reading this morning, as we prepare to enter a time of prayer and quiet reflection, is a poem by Gretchen Haley titled The Bright Thread of Hope. There is too much beauty in this world to give up on it yet, and it's always too soon to surrender to cynicism. Bring your doubt, your skepticism, your downright confusion, even your bitterness. But in the midst of all these, in the center, wrap your tender fingers around that still, bright thread of hope. Feel in your heart that still, steady hunger for something more. The vision that we glimpse every day in the rising sun across the foothills, the light that spreads across the face of the one we love, the look of knowing all there is to know and still loving us just as it is, just as we are. For this hour, we come to celebrate, to praise, to give thanks, to refuse to give up, to steady ourselves, keepers of hope, brave builders of the still possible world. Come, let us worship together.
The river is flowing,
flowing and
growing.
Thank you. I've heard it said that people come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn, and we are led to those who help us most grow if we let them, and we help them in return. Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you. Like a comet pulled from orbit as it passes a sun, like a stream that meets a boulder halfway through the wood, who can say if I've been changed for the better, but because I knew you. I have been changed for good. It well may be that we will never meet again in this lifetime. So let me say before we part, so much of me is made of what I've learned from you. You'll be with me like a handprint on my heart. And now whatever way our stories end, I know you have rewritten mine by being my friend. Like a comet pulls from orbit as it passes a sun, like a seed dropped by a skybird in a distant wood, who can say if I've been changed for the better, but because I knew you. I have been changed for good, and just to clear the air, I ask forgiveness for the things I've done you blame me for. But then I guess we know there's blame to share, and none of it seems to matter anymore. Like a comet pulled from orbit as it passes the sun, like a stream that meets a boulder halfway through the wood, you can say if I've been changed for the better. I do believe I have been changed for the better. And because I knew you, because I know you, because I've known you, I have been changed.
In the Broadway musical, Wicked, an imaginary prequel to The Wizard of Oz, the well-known song For Good is a duet by the two main characters. Elphaba and Glinda are close friends who rightly believe they'll never see each other again. Because I know you, each sings to the other, I have been changed for good. The phrase for good carries a double meaning, both forevermore and for the better. As we explore our theme of cultivating relationships, the first verse of For Good deserves our attention. I've heard it said that people come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn, and we are led to those who help us most to grow, if we let them, and we help them in return. Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you. Now, personally, I don't believe that it's true that people come into our lives or that everything happens for a reason, or that we are necessarily led to those who help us most to grow. Maybe. What I do believe is that if we are called to create communities, beloved communities, communities of radical hospitality where all are truly welcome, then we will necessarily encounter those who help us most to grow in every sense of the word, as individuals and as communities, if we let them. Linda and Elphaba certainly don't start out as friends, more like antagonists due to their deep inherent differences. Elphaba, with her green skin and abrupt manner, has spent her life in the margins. Linda is traditionally pretty and popular and essentially clueless about her obvious privilege. Despite their eventual friendship, their differences are real and deep. Actually, their friendship is forged in the struggle to overcome the mutual antagonism resulting from those differences. They overcome their antagonism, not their differences. So much of me is what I've learned from you. Because I knew you, I have been changed for good. That's a valuable realization, isn't it? It requires self-awareness and vulnerability to acknowledge with heartfelt gratitude that a relationship has changed who I am. What an unexpectedly valuable gift such a transformational relationship. But maybe, only in retrospect. I mean, I sincerely doubt that either Elphaba or Glinda would have pursued a friendship with another so disturbingly alien from her own ways of being if the motivation for such a friendship was a hope that knowing this person will fundamentally change me. In fact, Glinda's first impulse to overcome her antagonism involves helping Elphaba to be popular just like her, which is exactly the disaster you'd expect. Okay, let's consider the dynamics of this story in light of our commitment to widening the circle of concern within Unitarian Universalism. You may be familiar with the theological terms welcoming stranger and radical hospitality. The theological meaning of those terms goes much farther and deeper than we sometimes assume. They're not only about welcoming all people as equals or about being friendly to visitors, though honestly, we sometimes don't give enough attention to those practices. The stranger here isn't just someone we've never met. The stranger is anyone who isn't usually part of the conversation in the predominant culture of our community. Anyone with a different cultural background, abilities, perspective, skin color, gender identity, generation, educational level, work experience, spiritual beliefs or practices. Stranger could be anyone we encounter. If you've ever had that subtle feeling that the stranger is potentially dangerous to your community, you're right. The stranger may be disturbing to folks whose ways of being have predominated, who feel comfortable with a certain acceptable level of diversity. The stranger may have needs that make us anxious because we can't meet them. They may challenge our most cherished and familiar ways of being in ways we can't even anticipate. but secretly dread. And the stranger's not always outside. The stranger is sometimes inside, a silent voice in the status quo of community, which has to make you think twice about what predominant might even mean. Many years ago, I was attending a training on UU church growth, and one of the handouts referred to welcoming the stranger. And a participant remarked, "You know, I've never liked that phrase, calling newcomers strangers. They're just people, friends. We haven't met yet." That sounds so warm and welcoming, but it's also uncomfortably close to Glinda's initial attempt at friendship with Elphaba, her assumption that somewhere underneath all Elphaba's awkwardness and prickliness, there was a yearning to be pretty and popular in that Glinda-like way. So they could connect on common ground. Quaker educator Parker Palmer describes what he views as American culture's ideology of intimacy. And that's the worldview that the purpose of human life is to become fully developed, autonomous individuals, and that we can only do that within the context of warm, personal, intimate relationships. So we see others in terms of ourselves. Unless we're overt racists or sexists or homophobes or transphobes, etc., we want to believe that there are not irreducible differences among different groups of people. The ideology of intimacy doesn't get what pluralism really demands of us. Because encounters with the stranger, they decenter us. There's a fear that maybe we don't really define our own values on our own terms. Maybe we're actually being defined, interpreted, assessed, judged. The French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre believed that as we encounter the stranger, we perceive this decentering as a threat. And so we may want to eliminate that threat, which we do by projecting ourself on the other to wipe out the difference. Underneath, we're all alike. I don't see color. There's only one race, the human race. We don't have to think alike to love alike. All lives matter. So we domesticate the stranger in our own perception. We turn them into a friend, essentially like us. That's the ideology of intimacy. But in a melting pot culture, what happens to the ones who resist being melted? Parker Palmer says, hospitality to the stranger implies wisdom, love, and justice, rather than intimacy, warmth, and familiarity. Religious community shouldn't be a refuge from everything we might fear, he says. It should be a sanctuary from injustice. It should be a place of healing. But it can't be unless we create that space to allow the stranger to stay the stranger, bringing new gifts and wisdom and challenges to our familiar way of being. And by the way, this does not mean that we welcome all behaviors and ideas. Messages of hate and alienation don't create space for anyone to find new wisdom. And I'd also like to share with you the perspective of Henri Nouwen, a Dutch theologian who's work was rooted in psychology and spirituality and social justice. He believed that a religious community is either moving toward hospitality or it's moving toward hostility. you know, not anger or malice, but hostility in a more unintended way that lacks empathy for the stranger or is somehow averse to showing true hospitality. We truly widen our circle of concern. We practice radical hospitality when we welcome newcomers, as well as those already among us who may not reflect the currently predominant culture, when we welcome them with the expectation that their participation will change our culture, as indeed our living tradition would have us do. But all change involves discomfort and loss. Even positive change involves at least temporary discomfort and often permanent loss of the way we were. And we humans are very loss averse. Of course we are. I attended seminary at Meadville Lombard School of Theology on the University of Chicago campus. And for months at a time, over about 7 years, I shared such meaningful and intense connections with fellow students and faculty that, in retrospect, those times feel seared into my soul. The setting, the ambiance was a very, very integral part of that experience. The classes in old stone buildings holding almost a century of Unitarian and UU history. Interaction with university students in the common areas. Midweek vespers in the lovely Gothic-like chapel, a First Unitarian Church across the street. The beauty of the Hyde Park campus. Just the whole feel of being there. And several times after I graduated, I returned to attend an event, and I found that it profoundly mattered to me that this precious space was there to return to. 10 years ago, Meadville announced that for financial reasons, including the exorbitant cost of maintaining and updating the buildings for 21st century education, they were selling the historic buildings and moving to a modern space in a building located in Chicago's downtown loop. The culture shock of that decision reverberated through the network of Meadville alums so emotionally tied to memories of the Hyde Park campus. And yet it was undeniably the right move, a move that would well serve Unitarian Universalism and our future colleagues. But we alums, presumably so well versed in the dynamics of organizational change, resistance to change, and loss aversion, if the reaction in social media groups was any indication, we freaked out. This was a huge loss, and we would not directly experience the even huger gain. The period of mourning, sometimes involving anger and elaborate justifications for oppositions to this already done deal, lasted for months and maybe even years. It was traumatic, even as it was also ironic. A living example of just how very hard progress is because of the inevitable losses. Even when intellectually you understand the dynamics. What if we thought about evolution in congregational life or in Unitarian Universalism in terms of gains and losses? So I find that perspective really interesting. The motivational speaker Tony Robbins believes change only happens when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. And several studies of organizational change conclude that if a change involves both a loss and a gain, the gain must be much greater than the loss for people to welcome that change. Well, Is it? That's the big question for us in this moment of our history. How much value do we place on widening our circle of concern, on cultivating true relationships with people who bring real and disturbing differences to our predominant culture? Do we value the inevitable transformation and the evolution that that's bringing? Do we value enough to accept the temporary disturbance and the permanent losses? Our faith calls us to deeply consider that question. Let's put a human face on it. The Reverend Cheryl Walker, the former president of the UU Ministers Association and currently the senior minister of the UU Congregation of Wilmington, North Carolina, has written of her experience discovering Unitarian Universalism as a Black young adult after a friend invited her to a Sunday service. She rejoiced that she'd finally found her people. But Reverend Walker didn't join a congregation for a long time. Something didn't feel right. She says, people of color struggle to hold on to their identity with UU congregations. Our cultures are not valued in the same way as the dominant culture. As a Black woman, I am expected to give up my individuality in order to fit in, while others hold on tightly to theirs. That makes it a dangerous proposition for me and other people of color. I'm willing to give up some parts of my individuality and culture, but not all of it. And I'm increasingly unwilling to give up some if everyone else is unwilling to do the same. There's a story I heard on NPR a few years ago, and I think it's relevant to what's going on here. It was a tale of two cities, or rather, two small Nebraska towns, Schuyler and Fremont. By 2017, and that's when the story was on NPR, the population of Schuyler was more than 60% Latinx, mostly people who owned small businesses that lined the old brick roads with colorful signage. When Cargill opened its meat processing plant in 1969, a lot of the white people left, and there was a steady flow of immigrants. Mexicans, Somalians, Thais, and others that more than made up the difference. In 2017, Schuyler's mayor, David Reinke, said that a lot of these small rural towns seemed to be heading toward extinction, but it looked like Schuyler was still going to be there in 50 years. And besides ensuring its survival, the immigrants changed Schuyler in other ways, possibly in ways that the former residents might not have hoped for. The new residents shifted the politics. The school board president was Latino. Second and third generation immigrant kids made Schuyler's elementary school the second largest in all of Nebraska and still growing. 30 miles away lies Fremont, Nebraska, where the residents, 80% white, were trying to stop the development of a huge chicken processing plant being built by Costco, a project that would create 800 jobs. And one of the long-term residents said, we worry about the air quality. Okay, understandable. But wait, there's more. It seems that for years, the town had fought for an ordinance to stop undocumented immigrants from renting homes. And now they were fighting even harder. They did not want their farming community to become another Schuyler. A former Fremont city councilman said he welcomed immigrants, but we just want them to assimilate into our culture, speak our language, become legal, It's a shame what Schuyler is today. The downtown no longer is what it used to be, a Nebraska town. Well, here's my take on that. He knew that an influx of immigrants would create more homes and new business owners, a larger tax base. He knew it because that's what the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce had said. But he also knew that all those strangers, all those others, would fundamentally change Fremont. And he and other Fremont residents did not want that. Look what happened to Schuyler. OMG. I believe that the heart and soul of Unitarian Universalism resides in the same place as Schuyler, Nebraska's, which today is a progressive, first-class city with a growing multicultural population. We're beginning to name the parts of our history and institutional culture that have honored pluralism and progress, diversity and justice in spirit, while holding on tight to some long-cherished ways that have actually kept us from living those values. And it would be satisfying here to name some specific ways that those on the UU margins have been excluded from bringing their full selves to the welcome table. But I'm a white boomer. These are not my experiences. I can't speak for people of color. I can't speak for our youth and young adults, or for young parents, for LGBTQ folks, for UU Christians, for the differently abled and others. I can't speak for them, even as I'm committed to hearing and amplifying their voices. Those of you in the dominant culture can hear their voices too. You can listen and believe them. You can choose to continue the hard work of cultivating true relationship. This evolution within Unitarian Universalism is already happening. More and more of us are able to imagine what a wider circle of concern looks like. And we are in this work for the long haul, both in spite of and because of all our differences. Some do resist, unwilling to endure the inevitable losses, and unable to believe that the potential gains are far, far greater. I hope that one day we'll all experience and appreciate the inherent value of building a true beloved community. The final words here belong to the Reverend Cheryl Walker, who tells us this. In true community, we gain a lot. We gain the wisdom of others who may have different ideas from our own. We are supported in our life's journeys because we feel safe to be known at our deepest level, and because we are all committed to the health of our community. As together we go about this holy work, may it be so.
Now is the time in our service when we take a few moments to consider what it is that we are grateful for as part of this community, and what it is that we might have to offer. Take a few moments to remember that we drink from wells we did not dig and are shaded by trees we did not plant. Wolf exists today on land stewarded for centuries by Native tribes of the Pacific Northwest, and because of the love and dedication of those that founded our fellowship over 60 years ago. As we come to the end of our time together and extinguish our chalice, let us keep within us its light and its warmth as we move through our coming week and whatever it may bring. And let us carry it back with us when we meet again.